16. A luxury hotel on Coruscant made the luxury of other planets look like rags and ashes. In the Alessandra Hotel, rooms were situated at the highest levels of the highest buildings, complete with personal landing decks, bath pools, and servitor droids dispensing the finest wines, meals, and desserts. Affy, who spent the majority of her days in her tiny, bare-bones bunk on the vessel, spent a solid 5 minutes running her hands over the silky sheets of her utterly enormous bed.
"The beds are required to be this size,"
pointed out Scover as the servitor droids put away her things.
"Although they are extremely large by the standards of most humanoid species, nothing smaller than this would feel luxurious to a Grigorn, or even be sufficient for a Trototome."
Affy flopped back into a nest of pillows, relishing the unaccustomed softness.
"Okay, you're not impressed, so why bother staying in a place like this at all?"
Scover's home was nice, but hardly grandiose, and she was always careful with money.
"Important industrialists and politicians stay in such hotels, particularly here in the Federal District,"
Scover replied.
"These may be our future clients. I will be able to set up multiple meetings in the club levels below. Leave it to you to find the perfect excuse."
It wasn't an excuse. It was Scover's real reason, as Affy knew, but it sounded enough like teasing that it made Scover smile and ruffle her foster daughter's hair. Convinced of Affy's contentment, Scover thought little of leaving an hour later to begin working on some of those meetings. Affy lay still in the balcony's anti-gravity hammock for several minutes afterward, pretending to watch the clouds drifting by just above eye level. Almost idly, she reached out with one hand and swatted the control that would put all the servitor droids into dormant mode. The moment their mesh eyes went dark, she jumped up. Heart thumping, she dashed across the suite to the wardrobe where Scover's things were stored.
"I may be the worst daughter ever," Affy thought as she picked up one of Scover's info pads. "I ought to trust her. I shouldn't poke around in her stuff."
The entire time she was thinking this, her fingers were deftly typing in one of the top-level passcodes, one Scover had shared without a second thought. As soon as the full memory capacity of the tablet was open to her, Affy input the sector codes of the Amaxine station, the same ones that had been pre-programmed into the vessel. She had them memorized. After several days of seeing them glowing on the vessel's dash, they were practically seared onto her brain. She held her breath for the instant it took for more information to scroll across the screen. Certain phrases jumped out as though written in crimson. Transport hub, confidential. Revelation to competing guilds punishable by expulsion. Incentives include double bonuses, forgiveness of ship purchase price interest, shortened indentures.
"Indentures?" Affy whispered. "The Bind Guild uses indentured workers?"
She tried to navigate further into the transport hub part of the records, but those were closed even to her passcode. They must be for Scover's eyes only. In her mind, Affy pictured the long lines of smuggler's code, especially the small, downturned bird of prey. Quickly, she tapped in Kestrel's Dive. This information wasn't protected by any layers of security. Affy could have pulled it up with no passcode at all. That was how little Scover felt she had to hide. But as Affy read on, her hands began to shake, and she wished that she'd never opened the tablet at all.
"Many people of various species dye their hair or fur."
"I'm telling you," Wreath insisted. "They were Nihil."
There was a time, in fact his entire life up until the past 3 minutes, when Wreath would never have dreamed that he might stand up in the middle of a briefing by a member of the Jedi Council and announce that he had important information. But there he was. Later, he'd be embarrassed. For the moment,
He was busy trying to convince several skeptical masters, the remains of the briefing crowd, that the Jedi had already encountered the Republic's newest, deadliest enemy in the form of a young girl and an elderly man. A protocol droid piped up.
Requested transmission from the vessel incoming, Masters.
Thank the Force Leox was on the ship to get the message instead of lolling around in some spice den, Reeth thought. Or could Geode have sent it? Before he could wonder about Arok's ability to handle intership communications, the images were projected on screen. He pointed at Nan and Haig's ship. Look, see? It's definitely Nihil design.
The Nihil cannot be the only ones who make ships out of component parts,
reasoned Master Rosacen.
Especially not on the frontier, where shipyards and supplies are more difficult to find. However, the similarities are striking.
And there's carbon scoring, said Master Adampo, pointing it out before Reef had to. Proof that it's seen relatively recent battle. Although, on its own, it hardly looks like a ship that would pick a fight.
Exactly. Reeth focused on details that had eluded him before. How had he not seen it? This joint, right here, it's a weird version of an airlock, but if it were customized to work with other ships rather than with a station...
Yes, I've seen similar on hulls of other Nihil ships.
Master Rosacen closed her eyes with an expression Reeth found hard to read, then realized was relief.
Even if they were only two, you were very fortunate they decided not to pursue aggressive action on the station. We might have lost more than one soul. As it is, it would appear we escaped very lightly.
This was going to be the hard part. About that. Master Adampo's fur stood on end.
You don't mean... Do you think the Nihil had something to do with Des Rydan's death?
No, Reeth said. I don't see how they could have. Nan had been no closer to Des than Reeth had been. But while we were marooned there, Nan and I had several conversations about, well, the Jedi, and the Republic, and Starlight Beacon, plus future shipments to the area. He wanted to somehow travel back in time and shake his former self, so easily flattered and persuaded. Nan had tricked him into betraying the Order at the very moment when, many systems away, Master Jorah was dying. I thought she was just curious. I wanted to represent us well to a new area of the galaxy. Now I realize she was pumping me for information, which she got. He had expected dark, disapproving stares as the first and probably lightest aspect of his punishment. Instead, the council members only looked resigned. Master Rosacen said,
I wouldn't have suspected them either, especially with as little information about the Nihil as you had. And you couldn't have given away any classified material.
It's still useful information the Nihil didn't have but now do, Reeth said. It's my fault, and I want to set it right if I can. The Masters exchanged befuddled looks.
What do you mean?
Master Adampo said. Haig and Nan had to stay behind at the Amaxine station. They were still finishing repairs thanks to the help we gave them. Chagrin brought a flush to Reeth's face, but he didn't slow down. She said it would take a while for them to finish. Maybe Nan was lying, but at the time I didn't suspect anything, so she didn't have any reason to deceive me. Deceive me even more, I mean.
You wish to confront them,
said Master Rosacen.
To what purpose?
Reeth couldn't believe it wasn't obvious. They're Nihil. They learned intel about us. We could learn about them. We could hold someone accountable for what happened to the legacy run. We might even be able to make an arrest if their ship can be connected to any of the attacks.
They're only two people,
Master Adampo pointed out. They're on the Amaxine Station, Wreath said. In other words, the place where the idols were put to contain the dark side. To me, that suggests there's something interesting about the station. Something about its history we haven't learned yet. Potentially something powerful. If so, I don't think we should leave it for the Nihil to find. Rosacen tilted her head.
All valid points, but they are also hypothetical points. I do not know that at this time of crisis we can afford to send Jedi away to investigate a mere hypothesis.
The frustration was burning within Wreath. So you want to just let them go? Master Rosacen put her hand on his shoulder so gently that he was reminded of Master Jorah. As he swallowed hard, she said,
If you had learned their identities while still on the Amaxine Station, yes, you would have been right to take them into custody if possible. But at this point, it would mean sending people we need through hazardous hyperspace lanes to a dangerous station, only in the hopes that Nan wasn't lying to you, and their ship has not yet departed. It's too much risk for too little reward.
Maybe that made sense. All Wreath knew was that he couldn't accept it. May I put in a formal request to travel back on my own?
You may, Master Adampo said. But it'll probably be denied.
Master Rosacen added,
You have lost your master and your friend. You need new purpose, constructive action you can take, and you need it quickly.
This isn't about me and my feelings, he insisted, then questioned it. It isn't only about that anyway.
If it were that simple, we'd let you go, said Master Adampo. But it is a complicated time and a complex situation.
He spoke so kindly. They all did. It just made Wreath more determined to put in that formal request. And if he was denied, he might have to find out just how far he was willing to deviate from the Council's orders. Leox relaxed in the vessel's mess, wreathed in honeyed smoke and feeling pretty fine. The guild had been fair about their delay and had even kicked in a little hazard pay. That was thin on the ground in the Bind Guild. He suspected he had Affy to thank. At any rate, he was not a man to spurn largesse purely because of its rarity. The next day, he might stroll into one of those fancy Coruscant shops, get himself a new pair of boots. Geode might desire a good polishing. This pleasant train of thought was interrupted by a small voice. Leox? He looked up to see Affy standing in the doorway. She had on the exact same coverall as before, but had let her hair down. That one small change couldn't account for how much younger she looked, how much smaller.
What's the matter, little bit?
Her failure to object to her nickname worried him more than anything else. Affy plopped down in the other chair so they sat opposite each other across the narrow mess table. Instead of answering his question, she said, Where's Geode?
Hitting the clubs. The gods only know what time he'll be back. Someday that guy's gonna have to slow down.
I don't know how he does it, Affy said, but the shared joke brought no smile to her face. Leox leaned back and folded his hands behind his head.
Looks like I might get a whole lot farther by answering questions instead of asking them.
It took her a few moments to begin, and she didn't start with a question. The Bind Guild doesn't just hire people. It indentures them.
Correct.
You knew? She gaped at him. Why didn't you ever tell me?
At first, he admitted, I figured you had to be in on that little secret. What with being Scover's prized pup and all? Then I realized you had a sweeter view of the world still, and I didn't want to be the one to take it away. Shame any of us has to lose it.
Affy put her head down on the table. He didn't push or pry, just took another drag and let her work it through. Indentured servitude sometimes got made out to look better than it was, because it wasn't as bad as slavery, not even close. However, it also wasn't as good as freedom. Indentures came about when people desperate for employment met employers who wanted workers who couldn't talk back. Even ship owners fell prey to it when they wound up with more repair and fuel bills than cargo, not an uncommon risk for smaller craft. People sold their labor and freedom of movement for a set period of time, usually no fewer than 7 years. Leox had heard of indentures that lasted 3 whole decades. There were a few legal limits on what indentured servants could be forced to do in guilds that wanted to work with the Republic. They couldn't be required to risk their own lives, for instance, but that still left indentured people trapped for years in the misery of unceasing, unrewarded labor. The Huts, not surprisingly, built industries of such practice.
I looked up my parents' ship, Affy finally said. The Kestrel's Dive. That's how I found out they were indentured to Scover.
Getting that out had cost her. Leox reached into the nearby cool box and grabbed her a bottle of water. She took it without comment.
You were right about the smuggler's code,
she continued.
It wasn't some group trying to cheat Scover out of money. It's just proof that Bind Guild people use the Amaxine station. They almost have to. She offers bonuses and benefits if they'll take the risks, including knocking a few years off their indentures. I'm pretty sure that's the reason why my parents...
Affy gulped back a sob.
Why they took the Kestrel's Dive to that station, and why they died there.
That's where they died.
I found it in her records,
she said dully.
Marked confidential, just a few hours ago. Apparently, some traders tried tapping into the helix rings to boost their engines.
When done correctly, that maneuver could send a ship on a journey using only 1/10 the usual fuel. That would seriously amp up profit margins. But done incorrectly, and it was a hard thing to do right, it could blow a ship to smithereens. From the look on Affy's face, her parents must have made that mistake.
Oh, man.
Leox shook his head.
I'm so sorry you had to find out like that. Sorry you had to find out at all.
No, she said fiercely. Not that. I hate the knowledge, but I'm glad I know.
You just have to get used to carrying that weight.
She nodded. He clinked his own water bottle against hers. And for a while, there was nothing to do but take it in. The breaking of deep trance felt to Orla like surfacing from black waters, breath and light pouring over her. Although her eyes had been open, she had not been seeing her surroundings, or really anything, only connecting herself more profoundly to the other Jedi in the circle. They all exchanged glances as they turned toward each other, their movements in perfect sync. Orla still retained control of her own mind and body. They had not pooled consciousness completely, but they had reached a state of harmony that allowed them to mirror not only motions, but also thought and intent. This would give them the best possible chance of combating whatever evil was about to be set free. As one, they raised their hands, perceived anew the warm intensity of the Force containment, and extinguished it. The shrine in the depths did not fall dark, but everything suddenly seemed dimmer. No, she realized, just cooler. Even if the warmth of the containment had been an illusion, illusions had their own strength. What she didn't understand was that the chamber now seemed to be empty. Nothing more. The only emanations of the Force came from her fellow Jedi.
Did it
dissipate into the Vergence already? Orla asked. Confusion was weakening their shared bond.
Or is it still present, lying in wait?
Nothing's here.
Gik-2's eyes widened as she took this in.
Nothing is trapped here. Nothing ever was.
That's impossible, said Master Mirabel. We shared your memories of the Amaxine station. The darkness you sensed there, that raw power, it was very real.
And what about the warnings we received?
Orla interjected.
The visions.
I fear we may have misinterpreted the warnings. Komak walked up to the jeweled insect idol. Perhaps these were not used to contain the dark side. I think instead they were used to dampen it, to hold it in place. That's why the containment exercises have been so difficult to execute. We were overlapping with their original purposes, ultimately undoing them.
Explain in really simple terms for those of us not fluent in ancient force archaeology,
Orla said.
These statues weren't holding the dark side within themselves. They were holding the dark side on the Amaxine station, keeping it imprisoned there, attempting to warn us of it. Komak put one hand to his chest as the import of his own words sunk in. So, when we removed the statues...
We didn't remove the darkness,
Orla finished.
We set it free.